The Walking Dead Talk Through, Episode 58, Hostiles and Calamities, Review.
Oops. We're on easy street. Okay, seriously now.
Welcome to The Walking Dead Talk Through. A fan podcast dedicated to The Walking Dead on AMC. Join us each week as we discuss the characters, story developments, and theories of The Walking Dead. Send in your thoughts about each episode by calling 304-837-2278 or by visiting our feedback page at goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. And now, here's your hosts, Brian and Ruthie.
Hey, survivors, and welcome to another episode of The Walking Dead Talk Through. I'm Brian.
And I'm Ruthie.
And tonight, we are actually here to talk through Season 7, Episode 11's Hostiles and Calamities. And this was written by another freelance writing effort by David Leslie Johnson and directed by Carrie Skoglin. All right, so I'm going to go right into news.
There's a couple weird stories on the news.
Okay, so as I mentioned, he is a freelance writer, not on the regular Walking Dead team. He wrote Swear this season, and I believe he also wrote Chupacabra from season 2. Carrie Skoglin, this is her second episode of The Walking Dead. She directed The Next World last season, season 6, episode 10. And she also directed From Fear the Walking Dead, season 1, episode 4 and 5. That was not Fade Away. That was, of course, the 9 days have passed and we don't get to see any of it. It was a good episode. Not her fault, that part, but that story was forever damaged, in my opinion. And episode 5, which is called Cobalt, which was the code name for the show back in the day. Another info thing, the game that Eugene was playing is called Yar's Revenge, and that actually has some parallels to the whole Negan and his awful rule. But it's also Atari's best-selling original game from the original 2600. So, all right. So we've got ratings for 2 episodes since we didn't have any ratings last time. Last week, New Best Friend, Season 7, Episode 10, got a 5.28 in the 18 to 49 with 11.075 million. And that is down, but still respectable from the mid-season premiere, which got a 5.72 and 11.996 million. So it was down 0.44 ratings points and 917,000. Now, this week, ratings were lower, but it still didn't do bad considering the fact that it was on during Oscars. And I didn't see it live, but I heard about the ending there.
Yeah, I didn't see it live because even though I set my DVR to record 30 minutes later, it still didn't catch the whole thing. So I had to find it.
Yeah. That's what happened to me.
Alternative method.
That is what happened to me as well. It stopped on, I think, one of the best screenplay awards.
Mine stopped at best actress. Mm. I saw who got best actress, and I guess directly after that was best pick.
Yeah, they really need to fix that for live events like that on DVRs. But anyway.
Well, you know, my DVR asked me if I wanted to record extra time, and I was like, well, yeah. And so it suggested 30 minutes, and I thought, well, surely they won't go over 30 minutes because it's not like a sporting event. It's something that's scripted and scheduled. And anyway, they did anyway. Apparently, they went like an hour long or something. I don't know. I was just like, are you kidding me right now?
Yeah.
You guys are already just blah.
Yeah, I had to catch that awful ending on YouTube myself. So,
yeah, if you don't know what we're talking about, apparently, oh my gosh, I don't even know where to begin about Mr. Warren Beatty, who can't read because it says directly underneath the piece of paper what the award is for.
Yeah.
Re-announced Emma Stone winning Best Actress for her role in La La Land. So he gave the envelope to Faye Dunaway to read so that she was the one who actually said out loud La La Land, even though if either of them had read the envelope or the piece of paper that was inside the envelope, they would have realized that it was Best Actress that they were reading out loud. I guess there are two envelopes for every announcement or something. Yeah. I don't know why one of them got, because the, you know, when you win, they give you the envelope, you take off with it, I guess, or drop it or whatever. It's not sealed anymore in any case. So apparently the backup got reintroduced, and the guy, you know, whoever the head guy or something from La La Land was really cool about it. I'm not sure I would have been that cool in the face of such thing. I would have wanted to like seriously junk punch Warren Beatty. But Moonlight actually won. So after they got up there and gave speeches and everything. Yeah. And then the little accountant people are like freaking out because they apparently know who's supposed to win. And they get up on stage and they're grabbing people's envelopes out of their hands and looking at stuff and everything. And that's when they realized the horrible, horrible thing. And the one guy was actually in the middle of his speech and he was like, and apparently we didn't win.
I know.
So. Yeah,
and I know Blaine.
What is this bizarre segue that's happening right now?
Shut up, Blaine, because I want to say that supposedly the guy from PricewaterhouseCoopers, he tweeted backstage that Emma Stone, you know, was back there with her Oscar. And this was the same guy that supposedly handed the envelope over to Warren Beatty and Faye Dunaway. So he should have been paying more attention to the envelopes than tweeting. But
yeah, anyway. Well, I mean, still, when you're staring at an envelope that says Emma Stone, Best Actress, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
I guess it's a case of don't shoot the messenger, but still, I would have wanted to punch Warren Beatty in the face.
Right.
Like, can you not read, dude?
Well, clearly.
There's a conspiracy out there. You know what I'm saying? There's a conspiracy. A C-O-N-spiracy.
But yeah. Congratulations to the actual winners. And I know.
What is this bizarre segue that's happening right now?
Okay, all right.
Okay, please. So Hostiles and Calamities. Maybe
Hostiles and Calamities.
Maybe this will give you an indication of how this episode's going to go. But anyway. Oh, gosh. Oh, that's not what I wanted. I want this. But I also say.
No. Well, do it live! F*** it!
4.95 in the 18 to 49. Now, we made you wait a long time for that. But anyway, 10.423 million. So it was down a bit from last week, down 0.33 in the 18 to 49 and 652,000 lower than last week. Okay, so Talking Dead last week got a 1.82 in the 18 to 49 with 4.054 million. And that is versus 2.15, the mid-season premiere, with 4.804 million. So it was down 0.33 again, and 750,000 viewers. This week, it got a 1.74, so it was down again 0.08 from last week, and 3.937 million, so it's down 117,000. Okay, so two news items. One, I'm not going to talk about too much, but I guess I'll start with it. It's the second item on our list. Four developers from the Telltale company, the company that, of course, makes the famous Walking Dead Telltale series, were hired away by Ubisoft. So, and all four of them were heavily involved with The Walking Dead, so I don't know what that's going to mean for the show, for the game. But I thought I would mention it because we were light on news this week. But the second thing I got was that Andrew Lincoln is going to be shooting, and it's called Love Actually 2 in March.
What?
Yeah, and supposedly I think it's a parody because it is a part of Red Nose Day. And if you recall last year, Red Nose Day, they did a parody thing for The Walking Dead. That was that really funny thing where we saw them like berating Josh McDermott and a bunch of crazy stuff in there. It was in the theme of the Star Wars holiday special. It was kind of the same kind of thing. Anyway. So, supposedly, for the Red Nose Day, they are doing a Love Actually 2. And it's going to have all of the, I think, all 14 of the major people from that.
Except for Alan Rickman.
Except for Alan Rickman, yeah. So, okay. So, that's it for news. So, now it is time to give our ratings for this episode. Critically ratings, as opposed to Nielsen ratings. Ruthie, you haven't liked the Negan episodes, so maybe this will change, but what did you think of Hostiles and Calamities?
I, again, didn't really care for it. I would give this episode, gosh, 7.5... Jars of pickles.
Jars of pickles. Crunchy pickles.
Mm.
Well, I had a feeling this might happen. And if you're listening to us for the first time, I will state the disclaimer that I love The Walking Dead. I don't make that a secret. But I did not love this episode at all, actually. And it's still... I still gave it a 7, but I did, in terms of this season, it is probably my second least favorite episode, only behind Service. I gave it 7 utterly, completely stole cold Negans. And I think I know why I didn't like it. So, but we'll talk more about that. There is a very low flying plane over me. Did you hear it?
I did.
Man. So you actually rated it higher than I did.
Oh, I guess I'm just too ambivalent to, like, I'm not as invested, so I don't care as much if I didn't like it. Mm. I don't really care for the Negan stuff, and so I don't want to be passionate about it because I don't want to get yelled at again, so...
Well,
I don't care.
Well, I hate to say, but I'm right there with you. It's just not for me, but it's more than just the Negan stuff. So, but some of our audience did love the episode. We did get one other rating, and it came from Kyle, who gave it 9.2 Gremly Gunks in Eugene's pocket out of 10.
Grumbly Gunks. That's funny.
Yeah.
That is hilarious.
All right. So now it's time for awesome sauce.
Awesome sauce.
What you got?
I liked hearing Easy Street again. I thought it was funny.
So did I.
We're on Easy Street.
Okay, that's enough of that. I actually had that too. And yeah, I did like that. It was kind of surprising how they used it too.
Yeah, I don't know why they would have. I don't know. It was kind of weird that it just was on that boombox or something. I thought that was, I don't know, strange. But in any case, there it was. I thought it was funny.
Yeah. What else you got?
Dwight gets beat up.
Yep.
I was like, you know, if they're trying to make me feel sorry for him, I don't.
Yeah, I've got a lot to say about Dwight in this episode, and specifically Dwight and Sherry, I guess. But we'll get into that later. I will actually give an awesome sauce to, and it's not directly to Negan, but I will say that Negan seems to value Eugene more than Rick has so far. But I will, I guess, give a slight awesome sauce. Not really, but I was kind of struggling to find things to give awesome sauces to. I thought Negan was more subdued this episode, not so like bombastic and more menacing than he has been in previous episodes. More scary. So
you thought he was scarier in this episode?
I did. I guess obviously he was scarier in the premiere, but like compared to some of the other episodes this season, I thought that, you know, he was more subdued. He wasn't like doing that stupid lean back and, you know, taking 5 minutes to say something. It was a little, it was a little more villainous, a little less, like I say, bombastic. So I appreciated the slight change in character there. So do you have anything else awesome?
No, I don't try to find things that are awesome if I don't think anything else is awesome. So two's all I got.
All right. Well, the other thing I will say, and this is a positive to Eugene, I thought it was awesome that he figured out that the wives were trying to take out Negan, which, you know, I mean, it also could have been a trap. It's a trap. I still didn't find that sound effect. But, you know, I thought it was kind of cool that he figured it out. I mean, there were clues there, which I'll get into later, but I was happy to see that he figured that out. Well, we got a couple of awesome sigh from one from Alex. She said, "Oh my God, the exchange between Negan and Eugene, then Eugene and Dwight. Eugene is all the awesome sauce in this episode. Rock on, Josh."
All right. Kyle says, "My awesome sauce is just all of Eugene this episode. It was awesome to show him starting off scared, but at the end of the episode, he's figured it out and not cowering away. And he seems to have some sort of plan. Loved how his survival skill was going back to his genome project that he told Abe and Rosita to stay alive. His choice of orangey pasta sauce and not the red and no homemade kettle chips. What does he have against homemade chips? And finally, grumbly gunk that he took from the farmer's market to how it ended up in his pocket while watching his crew pour liquid metal on the fence walkers. It's like he turned into a superhero and grumbly gunk is his sidekick. Loved it."
Well, I will say that some people don't like kettle chips, so that might have been it.
To me personally, I felt like it was more of a, oh, they're homemade. They're not the greasy Lay's potato chips. Never mind.
Yeah, it could either that or at the time he didn't want to take, you know, the stuff from other people or something. I don't know, but just reacting to one thing that Kyle said there in the awesome sauce. Does Eugene really? Does he have a plan, or is he just making it up as he goes? That's my question. All right, time for the weak variety.
You're worthless and weak.
All right, do you have any weak sauce?
No.
Well, I guess I will, since we were talking about the liquid metal, I think I'll start with that. And I ask, how is pouring liquid metal on a corpse going to keep them animated? And for that matter, wouldn't it fry their brain? Like, I mean, we know that a certain heat amount will fry a brain. We've seen people that did not turn into walkers, you know, that were basically cooped up in a car, and they did not turn into zombies because I guess that their brain fried in the heat. So I asked that question. Liquid metal, you would think it would kind of fry their brain, but more, wouldn't it also kind of paralyze the walker so that, yeah, they might stick to the fence, but they wouldn't be able to move?
Yeah, I have no idea what the point or the purpose of A, the walkers on the fence, what that purpose is, and B, why he wants them to not fall apart, I guess. Well, that's the same question. I don't understand why he wants them there and why he doesn't want them to fall apart. Like, what are they supposed to do on the fence? And I also don't really understand how pouring liquid metal over them is going to do anything but destroy them.
Yeah. That I completely 100% totally, utterly and completely stone cold agree with you.
Okay.
My second weak sauce is, I think it comes down to the source of why I don't care for the episode. I think back to Self-Help, season 5, episode 5, because I had the exact same impression there. I thought we were done with the pathological liar, Eugene, but I guess not. And at this point, I question whether he's working undercover or if he's going to turn or has turned to the dark side. They left it too ambiguous at this point for me to feel really good about it. I mean, we can think, yeah, he wouldn't give up on our group, but I don't know. This is Eugene, you know. I wouldn't put it past him, and I don't like that part of his personality at all. You know, I don't like people that are like that. Lying liars who lie. So.
I didn't have a problem with it. I thought it's his survival instinct kicking in. So. Yeah,
that it is. But I don't know. Again, if there had been more of a signal to indicate his true intentions there, I might have felt a little bit better about the episode in general. But at the end, I questioned it, and, you know, I thought maybe my feelings would change after watching it, you know, subsequent, you know, a second, third time, even a fourth time today. My opinion didn't change at all. So.
All right. Alex gives us a weak sauce and says, I hate to say it, but it seems that the writers and director have caved on the violence issue. I know damn well that if my upper half were held in a furnace, I would be thrashing about and screaming. Dr. Carson did not make a peep. I'm sad.
And I don't know about the thrashing, but I definitely did hear screaming. And I checked that after, you know, watching it a couple of times. And he definitely did hear screaming. You also heard screaming from the crowd, but I did hear screaming, but like it did seem more subdued than it might have possibly been. And you certainly didn't see what was happening to Dr. Carson. So I tend to agree with you that they kind of held back a little bit and probably in editing. I don't know, but I didn't really have a problem with it because I don't know if I wanted to see it.
So I don't know. I don't know. I don't think that they caved. I think that maybe it just wasn't the most important thing in the episode. I don't know.
Yeah.
I didn't really care, honestly. I tune out a little. I have to say, I kind of tune out a little bit where like, oh, this whole episode's at the sanctuary. I put off watching it. I didn't really get that invested in anything that happened. So Dwight getting beat up was about the most exciting thing for me. So I was like, rock on. But I just, unfortunately, I'm not invested in that portion of the story and I don't really care what happens there. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't really paying that close attention to it.
Fair enough. All right. Well, we got another weak sauce, and actually I kept most of it in the feedback section because Kyle goes into more detail than I wanted to keep in the weak sauce. But just to summarize, the scene with Dwight and the doctor in the Iron Face meeting, he did not like that, but he'll go into more in a minute. So with that, let's get into feedback.
We can talk about it.
Done talking. Time to listen.
Okay, so our first bit of feedback is actually for the last episode. After listening to us, it came from Cutter, and he left us a voicemail. So, first voicemail in a long time. So, thanks, Cutter.
Yay for audio.
Yeah. All right, here it comes.
This is Steve Cutter Blades calling for the Walking Dead talk through from Nashville, Tennessee. So, Brian, Ruthie, you know, I was listening to last week's episode, and you were having a lot of talk about the scavengers. And I want to throw a theory by you about the scavengers. You know, you talked about their strange names and the strange way they talk, and it doesn't make sense. And I hear you, but I want to throw out here that you got to remember that they're in Northern Virginia near Washington, D.C. So I want you to think about the fact that you probably have a ton of people that used to work in embassies from countries all around the world, all of which would have been trapped once America went on lockdown and quarantine because of this virus that went crazy. And those people probably lived in communities right close to each other because that's the way that it works. So it's quite possible that the scavengers come from this. And another theory I want to run past you is the piece about the boat. I think the boat was actually bait set by the scavengers now that things are a little more difficult. So this is how they're going to get out there and get stuff. I'm just saying, they will probably set the trap and watch. That's all I got. Talk to you later. Bye.
Well, thanks, Cutter, for that.
Cool. This really makes me laugh because I was talking to one of my coworkers last week about the episode, who really likes The Walking Dead. And I cannot, honestly, I thought she brought it up, but then I was thinking about it and I was like, well, maybe I brought it up. We talked about the exact same thing, that, you know, all of the embassies are centralized in, like there are, you know, consulates in other cities, but every country on the planet who has an embassy in DC. And that's a lot of foreign language speakers. So. Maybe they're all just Euro trash. Just kidding. No offense to our... thank you. No offense to any European listeners we may or may not have. It's just a terrible joke.
Well, makes me think of Mike Myers and his Sprockets character from Saturday Night Live.
Yeah. This is the part on Sprockets when we dance.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, it's funny because they kind of wore similar outfits on that. They were black and, you know, anyway. But yeah, it's a good point. I definitely could see, you know, if English is a second language, you know, shortening the words, you know, the phrases, that would kind of make communication more efficient and easier. I guess.
Yeah. On the other hand, though, if they work at an embassy in the U.S., they are all perfectly fluent in English. So
yeah,
there is that as well.
Yeah. All right. Well, we just heard from Cutter, And our very first feedback for this episode is also from Cutter. And he just simply says, not Easy Street, please. Sorry. Okay. I'll stop it before it gets going.
That's because Brian doesn't like you.
Oh, no. I like you, Cutter. I know Cutter from, before the podcast began. So
I know. I was just being facetious.
I know. But anyway, couldn't help myself. And nobody commented about me putting the fight scene, fight music from Kirk at the end of the episode. It was one of those things from last week. I was like, man, why didn't I do that? It was like on the tip of my tongue. I kept thinking about it, but I didn't actually put it in there. And then I'm like, I gotta do this. So that's how we ended the episode.
Heard it.
I know, but Ruthie didn't actually hear it while she doesn't hear that when we actually do the episode. I put that in later. So anyway,
I heard it later.
Kyle says, I enjoyed this episode much more than last week. Eugene was awesome. I loved his smirk after talking to Dwight. I thought it was interesting the juxtaposition of the use of the dreaded Easy Street Negan is using to break and turn an enemy into a friend. In the cell, it is painfully used against Daryl to break him. In this episode, Eugene seemed to be enjoying it, if not dancing to it. With Daryl, he had to lock him in a cell and deprive him of sleep and food. In Eugene's case, it was to make him feel welcome, home with all of his needs met. And I loved seeing that with Eugene's reaction to that song. The whole scene with the doctor and Dwight in the Iron Face meeting, I don't get how the doctor this whole time was giving all words of wisdom to Dwight about Sherry. He seems like he's not a minor member of Negan's crew, but when it came time for him to explain himself, he was at a loss for words. And what's with Dwight being sent out on a mission to find Sherry and bring her back? That he's trusted to do this alone? Like, wouldn't Negan send Dwight with another one of his men to watch him as backup? But no. He's just all alone and then comes back saying she ran into some walkers and he killed her because she was trying to run away. And Negan believes this because Dwight tells him that she came clean about her and the doctor. This just seemed a little weak for me. I mean, it helps the story. I guess you could say this shows some of Negan's weakness that Alexandria and the others can use, or I guess maybe Eugene is seeing some of that. I mean, Negan is all high on his power, and so I could see that is blinding him to those around him. And why kill the doctor? I mean, wouldn't having a doctor and even two, Dr. Carson, I guess, was who Negan referred to after killing the doc, be something very, very valuable? And to lose one just by throwing him into the furnace? I mean, that's going to smell the place up for weeks, but why not just iron his face and you still have a doctor? It just seemed so stupid, but again, could just be showing us how Negan's ego is making him make stupid decisions. Oh, the farmer's market kind of made me think how the whole economic system isn't really a great system if you can just have a new guy come up and say, I'm number 16, I work for Negan, give me all that stuff, no questions asked. It's like there is no real accountability other than just writing stuff down in a notebook. Well, I guess that is all. I do have to say, this back half is really turning out fantastic. It might not be perfect, but it's way above and beyond what we got in the first half. Can't wait to see how this all plays out.
All right. Well, thanks, Kyle. That's a lot of good feedback, actually. Some good insights there. One thing I wanted to react to was Carson. And I think that he was at a loss for words because he was innocent. I mean, he was framed by Dwight, quite simply. I mean, I think he confessed in an attempt to save getting the iron. And of course that didn't really work out for him. Worked out worse, but,
Yeah.
Cause that little note that, we saw, I think Negan had, that was a piece of the letter that, Sherry wrote for Dwight. I recognized it had this exact same ending, and of course, honey instead of Sherry. It seemed kind of, funny that she would, even if something was going on between them, that Sherry would call herself honey to the doctor, you know, but,
I think it was more like calling him honey, like the doctor called it honey. Goodbye, honey.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's a good point.
But still.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think he's also letting his insecurities through because he basically coerced all the women into, being with him more or less. And so of course he's going to be insecure about whether or not they actually want to stay with him because they don't.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So I think it's easy for him to buy into that because it's something that he already fears is true.
To get to Negan, I agree that Negan was stupid killing the doctor. And I don't also think that he was pretty much stupid for almost everything he did in this episode. I mean, the only thing I can say positive about what he did was his ability to read and deal with Eugene in a much different way than he dealt with Daryl, you know. But, you know, it seemed pretty clear to me that the doctor was innocent, and he just took Dwight at face value, you know, like you said, sent him out alone, which I agree. It makes no sense for him to do that. You would think he would go out with, any of the other guys. It just not even the check on Dwight, but just, you know, as a matter of principle, you would think two people could find Sherry easier than one, you know? He also gave Sherry the benefit of the doubt, you know, tried to make it that, I wasn't clear that, like, who was he blaming for Daryl to escape? Was he blaming that Sherry did it? Or the doctor?
He was blaming the doctor.
Yeah, that was
because he said that the doctor saw how much it bothered Sherry that Dwight was, or that Daryl was there. And so the doctor set Daryl free for Sherry, and that Sherry ran because she was afraid that, Negan would blame her, which he of course did.
Yeah.
Wrongfully. I didn't think he did anything smart this whole episode. And I was like, how is this guy in charge of anything? He's just
dumb. It just shows, you know, chinks in the armor to me. And it shows to me how vulnerable Negan truly is. And yet, you know, he doesn't see it. He's just too full of himself.
Yeah, well, he's so cocksure that he just doesn't understand that loyalty from fear is not the same thing as loyalty from love. Yeah. So,
and the other thing I will say that Negan did something that we also saw Rick do, and that was he kind of discounted the worth of Carson. And when I say that, like, I'm thinking back to, what the heck was the name of the episode? I know it was episode 15 from last season where, Rick was after Denise died, and, he basically made it sound like, you know, everything was at their grasp, even though they had just lost the only doctor that they had. And to me, I thought that was crazy. It bugged me then. I said it on this show. And it's stupid to me. A doctor, you know, much like I think Herschel was, you know, although he's a vet, but, you know, same difference in the zombie apocalypse. Someone,
well, with, not exactly.
Okay, but I mean, you know what I mean. I mean, a vet in the zombie apocalypse is pretty close to a doctor. You know, closer than most people can get. But the point is, Carson was a doctor, and that is a rare commodity in the zombie apocalypse. And yet, again, we see another doctor kind of be discounted, and that bugs me.
Yeah, as much as I bitch about doctors, I sure would want one during the zombie apocalypse.
Yeah.
I know I don't have any medical training. I mean, there are a lot of things I can figure out for myself unless I come in contact with, you know, something that's, I don't know how to explain what I'm trying to say. Like, I understand when I have the flu, I don't need a doctor. But if I get an infection or, you know, I don't know, any number of other things, like, yeah, I would want a doctor.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And I think you said last episode that an infection will kill you just as easily as a zombie bite.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. All right. Did you have any more to say about Kyle's feedback?
Oh, man. I was trying to take notes as I was reading it. I wasn't really, but I was trying to think about what I wanted to say as I was reading it, which didn't really work because I was too busy reading it. I did not really understand why Dwight picked the doctor to throw the doctor under the bus. That was my question. I'm like, why did he? It seemed on one hand to be a rather random choice, I guess. Like, I mean, I don't know. I was just kind of like, I guess there was a previously established rapport between the doctor and Sherry that we just never saw. And so it made sense to everyone else, apparently, but it didn't make any sense to me. I was like, okay, I don't know why that would be so much more believable than, Dwight.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah, and that's the thing about Negan being, you said, that's a good word there, cocksure. You look at the way Dwight was looking down. He wasn't looking up during that whole thing. I mean, his guilt was right there, right plain on his face. I mean, you know, someone who's lying tends not to look people in the eye. And Dwight was not looking at anyone in the eye, especially Negan, and of course, Carson. You know, he wasn't looking at any of them.
But, I mean, I guess Negan can justify that because he's about ready to have to do something that's pretty horrific. So, and it's something that he has had done to him. So I'm like, where's the guy who did that to him? Like, why is he not the trusted, you know, confidant or whatever?
Yeah.
Like, where's that guy? Why is Dwight suddenly so, you know, it's because he's so certain that he has everyone under his thumb, that he has everyone cowed. And I think that probably will end up being his downfall.
Yeah, I agree. He has blind spots that are, you know, quite massive at this point.
Fingers crossed. All right. I don't think I've got anything else really to say about.
I do concur about the economic system, though. It is kind of odd that, you know, he could just simply, you know, throw a number out there. You know, how did he arrive at 16? Did he have any proof that he's number 16? Not that I saw. And it just seemed to me that it reminded me of something, and it was actually earlier in the episode, something that Dr. Carson said to Dwight when he was getting patched up. It made me wonder yet again, what is the difference between a settlement that is being subjugated by the saviors and a savior's outpost? And does one, or if or how does one transition into the other? I mean, are the outposts originally places that were subjugated, you know, like the kingdom? Well, I guess the kingdom is a weak example because there's this weird relationship, but the hilltop, Alexandria, will they turn into outposts in theory at some point, or like, what's the difference exactly? I don't understand that part of it.
Mm.
I guess at this point we will go into our own discussion. Do you have anything that you want to start with?
I was like, I'm watching this episode and again, reinforcing why he's my least favorite character. He's a, you know, beat your ass first, ask questions second kind of guy. And yeah. I'm like, are you serious right now? And I don't personally understand why anyone would choose to be feared over being loved. Because if you can get someone to love you, then they will follow you anywhere. If you can get someone to fear you, they will follow you insofar as they fear you.
Right.
So I don't understand that logic. And I say, once again, he's just a bully.
That he is. And I know Tanya would agree. She says,
are you serious?
Yes, I picked up another Are You Serious for this week.
I don't know where that one came from.
It actually came from when Eugene met up with Frankie and Tanya, and when they were trying to get Eugene to make some poison up for supposedly Amber. She said, are you serious? Anyway, one thing I noted, and it's, you know, going back to Negan here. A simple I'm Negan from Dwight acquits him for any wrongdoing? Really? That's all it took. And Negan is convinced that Dwight didn't do anything.
Yeah, well, he's believing his own press.
Yeah. And I don't believe that Dwight was involved in either Sherry or Darryl leaving. I mean, you could tell that simply by how he reacted, but, you know, he also said that, Sherry wasn't involved, and for whatever reason, Negan also believed that.
Well, he was just willing to cover up for her, so, yeah. You know.
Yeah. I noticed that they were going to send the good cop to Alexandria, namely Simon. So we've already seen that. So actually, I don't know if by the end of the episode we're kind of up to the present, but yeah, so we saw that back in Rockin' the Road. The good cop was Simon. And to me, that is not a good cop.
Did he actually say good cop?
He did.
That's funny.
Yeah, he did. I was surprised when he said that. But yeah, I kind of chuckled a little bit, but I'm thinking, yeah, good cop is in bad cop and worse cop.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah. One of the things that did not work for me in this episode, and we don't find out about it until Dwight gets to, you know, the old house that he and Sherry used to live in. The whole thing about Dwight's memory, we hear, you know, she basically in a lot of ways is insulting Dwight, you know, telling him that he doesn't have a good memory and, you know, he's going to forget this and that and, you know, making it easier to live with himself. But clearly, you know, he, at least when it came to her, his memory was somehow fixed. So that whole thing about his memory, I don't know if it's going to come up later and be a plot point, but it really didn't make much sense this episode. It didn't pay off at all, I thought. It was weird. It seemed like a throwaway.
I don't know.
Yeah, it just seemed like a throwaway to me. So.
Well, it didn't really make much sense, honestly, because it's like, what is he have early onset Alzheimer's or something? And I mean, people can have a bad memory but not forget who they are.
Yeah.
So that's what I didn't understand. I was like, what?
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, she also said something like, basically, I kind of saying, you know, I loved who you were, but not who you are. And that it was her fault for making him what he is now. You know, that's paraphrased, of course, but
pretty much it's all her fault. She's the one that wanted to go back. She's the one that made him betray Darryl, who was willing to help them.
Yeah. Yeah.
So She's the one that turned him into Negan's little lackey. So,
yeah,
I really hope, I mean, I really, really, really hope that she knows how to stay gone, because Negan's right. If he finds her, it's going to be hell to pay.
Yeah. The one point I had to note is, it's kind of funny. She got a send off much like Heath did. And she, Christine Evangelista, who plays Sherry, has a kind of a similar thing going on as Corey Hawkins, who plays Heath, has. And the fact that I believe on Sunday, well, anyway, it's March 5th. I think that's Sunday. Yes, March 5th, Sunday. She stars in a new series from E! Called The Arrangement. So, and she's the lead on it, you know, and of course we know that Corey Hawkins is playing, the lead in the new 24 spinoff. So it's just kind of funny. I mentioned earlier about, how Eugene was able to figure it out about them wanting to poison Negan. And the reason why I think he was able to figure it out was Tanya, or Tanya, whatever you say, because the way she said it, she said that they need two doses because they don't know when they'll get a chance or something like that. But the thing is, I thought that Amber was willingly wanting to take the doses. That, you know, so if that's the case, I mean, why do they need two? That doesn't make any sense.
I don't know. They clearly did not think it out very well.
Yeah. Another thing I was trying to figure out about Dwight, and, you know, why he did what he did, made me think, and it was something, you know, that Negan said, well, why would he do that? Because we know if we find Sherry, I'm just going to iron his, the other side of his face, and, you know, until he's dead. And maybe he did what he did because, you know, to obviously to protect Sherry, but that if he gets found out, that would bring death. And maybe she, or he now agrees with what Sherry said about death being worse than living under Negan's thumb.
Not being worse.
Okay. Not being worse. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Death being better than living under Negan's thumb.
Because that's what they said to each other. At least we're alive. But yeah. Now she's like, not so much.
Yeah. Do you have anything else?
I didn't really understand the signing bonus. I'm like, okay, so the signing bonus is look, don't touch. I mean, if I were a guy, I'd be kind of like, gee, thanks.
Yeah.
It's like, why don't you just let me go window shopping somewhere? It didn't make any sense to me whatsoever. I mean, I understand he's got his thing about, you know, only if they're willing or whatever. I get that. But find a girl who's willing and send that girl to him, because I don't know that much about men, but I do know that they're highly motivated by sex. So I don't know. I just, that whole issue to me just didn't really, I was like, what? Okay.
What?
Yeah. And then she puts her hand on his leg, and of course he's got the fear of God scared into him, so he, you know, freaks out and moves his leg away because he doesn't even want her to touch him, because, you know, he's afraid that he might slip and fall onto her or something. I don't know. I mean, I'd be scared too. I'd be like, stop touching me.
Something that Eugene said prior to them coming over was that when Negan, you know, offered the signing bonus, Eugene was like, well, I wouldn't know about that. I think it was something that Josh McDermott said on Talking Dead, that he thinks that Eugene is almost certainly a virgin. And
he said, well, Negan said something along the lines of, you know, being around beautiful women makes you feel relaxed or something like that, basically. Yeah. Being in the company of beautiful women makes you feel relaxed. And he's like, I wouldn't know. Because I guess he's hasn't really been in the company of beautiful women, so to speak. Which I don't know if he's insinuating that that means that he's, you know, never been with a woman or what. But I don't know. I just, that whole scene, I was like, wow, what a reward. I get to have dinner with a woman. It seemed insulting to me. I don't know. It just seemed highly insulting to me. Now, and I guess you would think it would be the opposite. Like, you wouldn't want, you know, that a woman would be insulted if she were going to be offered up as a piece of meat. But to me, I'm like, if you're talking about a man and incentivizing a man, then, you know, that's how you incentivize a woman. Ooh, let me romance you. But how you incentivize a man, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. I don't know. Tell me if I'm off base. But as far as I know, you incentivize a man by offering a little, you know, quality time.
Well, I would say that, you know, if anything, being around three beautiful women is going to frustrate Eugene in ways that I will not elaborate on.
But in ways that if you don't know, then you just don't need to know.
Yes. Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. The whole thing was weird. Yeah. It was just, you know, yet another thing I didn't care for in an episode that I didn't care for. So.
Yeah.
So one other thing that I had, and I don't know if you have anything else, but if you do, I'll give you the floor after this. I noticed after Carson is eliminated, Negan says, it's a good thing we have a spare Dr. Carson. Now, I assumed that means that Negan is going to be taking the other Dr. Carson from the Hilltop. But is that what he meant? Or did he mean that Eugene is going to doctor up, that he somehow thinks that Eugene can be the doctor?
No.
Just because he got PhDs and whatnot, supposedly. Which I don't think he does, but
I wouldn't be surprised if he does, but I don't think that his PhD is necessarily in what he says it is.
Well, does he have a PhD?
Well, I don't know. I mean, like I said, I wouldn't be surprised if he did have a PhD, but I don't know that it would be in the Human Genome Project. I mean, well, I guess that's something that's, I would have just crapped and died laughing if What's-Her-Face had actually been a geneticist.
Oh, yeah.
I would have been like, he's like, oh, you wouldn't understand. And she's like, I think he just called you stupid, which he kind of did. I'm like, if someone tells me that I wouldn't understand, that to me is I'm trying to be polite when I tell you that you're too dumb to understand. It's like, no, I'll tell you when I'm too dumb to understand something. But of course, he has no idea what he's talking about, so he can't really elaborate. I thought it was hilarious. I didn't think it was weak. I thought it was hilarious that he was falling back on the, you know, it's classified, I can't tell you shtick, because how does that work on anybody but a former member of the military is what I want to know. I mean, like, I'd be like, you really think that matters right now?
Yeah. And, you know, if he tries to use that similar shtick with Negan, I don't think he's going to be able to get away with it's classified, you know. I think he's going to have to, he's going to quickly say, I'm not a scientist. But
So what do you think? Do you think that, you think he's actually going along to get along, or do you think he's actually buying into it?
I am.
Like, did he turn? Did he just sell out basically all of his friends, or is he still on their side?
I am not sure. And that was part of the problem that I had with the episode, because I could see it going either way. And I hope that he hasn't, you know, gone to the dark side, but I could see him going to the dark side very easily, because that's kind of in his character. And Negan, I said it earlier, Negan seems to appreciate Eugene in ways that we never saw Rick appreciate him. And that is a concern.
Well, I don't think that Rick had any use for that kind of a skill. He did not have that kind of established at the time that he met Eugene. They did not have the use for the skills that he was, you know,
true,
insinuating he could provide. You know, what we need to have are skills that you don't possess. And I don't think that it was, I think it was short-sighted to maybe treat him that way. But I think that stemmed a lot from their frustration of being lied to,
right,
about, you know, this, that, and whatever as well.
Right.
So, because, I mean, Rosita, in, you know, true Rosita form, was a complete and total bitch to him for, yeah, okay, you know, he lied, get over it. I'm sure, you know, and like, you've never lied in your life. And, I don't know. I think, like I said, I think that it was short-sighted for people not to value the things that he could do.
Right.
But at that time, and still kind of what they were dealing with, they, you know, they were in, and still, I mean,
I think that he would have been more valued had they discovered him at the prison. Because at the prison, they were already established and, you know, having a community, and they were trying to build things and farm and all this kind of stuff. And had Eugene stumbled upon them at that point in time, I think that his skill set would have been way more valuable then.
Mm.
But when they were basically on the run and had no water and needed to basically be hunter-gatherers to survive, being able to make bullets, not a top priority.
Okay, yeah, I agree. Now, his skills would be something that Rick could use, but now he doesn't have them, so.
I don't know that Rick ever necessarily directly undervalued him in the same way that Rosita did, but, you know, we never saw that, so I don't know. Personally, I don't think that Eugene has turned. I think that, like someone said, probably on Talking Dead, I think that he is not going off half-cocked, because he is very smart. And he does understand that the plan that the sister wives had come up with basically would have failed, probably spectacularly, and gotten them all killed. And he's right. They are replaceable.
Yeah.
He is not.
Right.
And, you know, they call him a coward and he's like, yeah.
Yeah.
But I think that's because at this point in time, that's the way that he has to be. He can't be Daryl. He doesn't have Daryl's skill set. He has to be Eugene, and he has to plan and be the way that Eugene can survive.
True enough. All right. Do you have anything else about this episode?
I was wondering if, I guess the question was answered about, would Dwight really have run off with her when he busted out the beer and pretzels and blah, blah. But I was kind of like, well, would he have, or would he have, you know, I don't know. And I'm at this point in time, I'm questioning whether or not Dwight will end up turning on, Negan. I feel like he will, because of what Sherry said in the letter. And I feel like he's sort of feeling Eugene out, so to speak. He's kind of hedging around him a little bit, kind of sniffing around, maybe trying to figure out, hey, so when you said I am Negan, did you really mean it? You know, that kind of a thing. I don't know.
Yeah. And to that end, I have a clip, not of that, but of what happened just before it.
You don't need to be scared. You just have to answer me one question, and it's a big one. Who are
you? I'm Negan. I'm utterly, completely stone cold Negan. I was Negan before I even met you. I just needed to meet you properly to know. I'm Negan.
I was Negan before I ever met you?
Well, I think he, you know, for all of his lack of social skills and those types of things, I think he is good at recognizing how to, I guess, I mean, I don't know. Like, I say this, like, I'm thinking it in my head, and I'm like, well, that doesn't make much sense, because if he doesn't have any social skills, then he wouldn't really be very good at reading people. But at the same time, he's basically, in that scene, he's stroking Negan's ego. That's pretty much all he's doing. To me, anyway. That's what it seems like.
That's a good point, and you made me think of something like that, because he was exactly what Abraham needed, you know, when they first met, because Abraham was about to kill himself, and he needed a new purpose, and Eugene gave him that purpose, and it seems like Negan needed him to be, you know, this, especially with Fat Joey being gone, who I guess was the equivalent. He needs, you know, another techie guy, and certainly Eugene fills that. So if he at least acts like he's a stone cold Negan, that's going to serve him well until he's not.
Right. You know. And like, in the same way that they wouldn't believe Daryl if he had just been like, oh yeah, I'm Negan, I think he fully does believe Eugene, because Eugene has basically done everything but crap himself.
Yeah, and hopefully the final scene there is the seeds of Dwight and Eugene, eventually forming a pact, you know, to take down Negan from within. But I don't know. There's just something about Eugene. I can't completely give him the benefit of the doubt. I want to, but I can't. I hope that he is, you know, just doing it undercover, and, you know, will eventually come around and still be for our guys. But I just don't know about him, you know?
I don't know either.
All right. Do you have anything else?
I don't think so.
All right. Okay. Well, that's it for our discussion of this episode. But if you would like to submit your theories and feedback for the next episode, you can do that with text or audio if you go to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. There's also the 304-372-2278, which we hardly ever give during the episode, but that is our number. And SpeakPipe, which you can get from that feedback page. But most people give us feedback at our Facebook group, which we got a few more people in there this week. Thank you for joining. Go to facebook.com/group/walkingdeadgsm. And Tanya says, if you haven't joined...
Are you serious?
And of course, Negan says...
Are you kidding me?
You should join. It's good. Anyway, so if you want to send us feedback, our deadline is Tuesday at 6 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Central, the Tuesday after the episode has aired. So you can also reach us via Twitter, and our handle there is Walking Dead GSM. So support us by not only joining Facebook and liking it, or follow us on Twitter, but I will also say this, something we don't normally ask for with support, but if you like us, tell a friend. Mention it on Twitter that you listen to us. Mention it on Facebook that you listen to us, outside of the group. Just spread the word. And another way you can spread the word is by giving us an iTunes rating or review. And I want to thank Mel8712424 for, and I don't know if Mel is a he or a she, could I be either, I guess, but thank you, Mel, for your Canadian iTunes review, which was a 5-star.
Yay.
So.
Go Canada.
Yeah, happened to find that in searching this week. Haven't had any reviews come or ratings come back in the States for a while, so you can search for us on iTunes just by searching The Walking Dead or Talk Through. Search for Talk Through, you'll find us right away. And you can also find other ways to support us by going to goldenspiralmedia.com/support. And then there's our MS campaign, Geeking Out MS, goldenspiralmedia.com/MS.
All right. Our next episode is episode 12, Say Yes, written by the ever-prolific TBD, directed by Greg Nicotero. And the description is the group savages scavenges for supplies. Back in Alexandria, someone must make a morally challenging decision. I wonder who that is.
Yeah, I really want to tear away. I was trying to think of something with Tara, but
yeah, that was totally not.
It's bad.
Subtle. That's the word I was thinking of. That was not subtle at all.
Not at all.
Oh, goodness.
And this is it for this episode. But until next time, I'm Brian.
And I'm Ruthie.
And this is The Walking Dead Talk Through. Good night, everybody.
Bye.
Are you a podcaster who loves creating great content but gets overwhelmed by the audio editing process? Are you a business professional or an entrepreneur that wants to start a podcast but aren't sure where to begin? You need Pro Podcast Solutions. Pro Podcast Solutions has a robust suite of services to equip podcasters and help podcasters create better content than ever before. Visit ProPodcastSolutions.com today and find out how you can get your first episode produced for free. That's ProPodcastSolutions.com.